Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to MedicalHouseCalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Titans scheduled to pick at number 7 overall in the NFL draft, which, Joe, we're less than 2 months away. So we're getting there to the NFL draft. I finally feel okay talking about it. It's like, okay, it's around the corner. The combine has happened. The draft is somewhat here.
Yeah. I mean, it's still – like, I'm not doing a mock draft until free agency is done because, to me, it's like
– that's probably smart.
Yeah, thank you. You know? But I think it's okay to talk draft still.
I guess too.
I mean, they're both happening now. So it's what? Negotiating period, 6 days away.
Yep.
Free agent negotiating period.
Yep.
You know, like tampering time right now. Kirk Cousins bought a storage unit in Atlanta or something like that happening. I don't know. I got to see what Florio has on this. Florio. So for people who don't know, Pro Football Talk reported that there's credible – I haven't read what the report is, but I saw the tweet, which is there's credible, you know, indications that Kirk Cousins is moving his family to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So apparently people are all over him. And then he tweeted it's Pro Football Talk, but it's Florio tweeting. He quote, to the folks who tried to dismiss our reports by saying we have no sources or whatever – you realize we had like 50 guests on our show last week from Indy, right? You realize pretty much everyone in the league reads PFT, right? You realize I've been doing this 23 years, right? 3 question marks on the last right. Calm down, Florio. Jeez. Calm down.
You realize everybody in the league reads my stuff, all right?
Sounds like someone else I know. But anyway, yeah, the headline is indications building a potential Kirk Cousins move to Atlanta.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm just going to read this as you – I'm trying to find, like, what do they have? I mean, look, I think it's certainly a possibility, right?
Sure, of course. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that. But, yeah, I'd be interested to see exactly. Florio, like, in the bushes somewhere. It's like, oh, found Kirk Cousins' house. Bought in Atlanta. Vic DeFour and Tashawn Reed at The Athletic. Vic, I know for sure, is friend of the show. I don't know if Tashawn is. We had him on.
Deshaun, you know, I've tried to have Deshaun on, but, you know, he's a young guy who lives in Las Vegas.
Well, there's that. They came out with this piece at The Athletic, and the Raiders apparently trying to move up. They're exploring trading up in the first round, and obviously when you hear that, you think of a quarterback, and there have been people trying to make the connection to the Patriots. Could the Raiders trade up with the Patriots? But also – have apparently had conversations centered on potentially trading for picks in the 5 to 7 range. Obviously, the Titans are in that range at pick number 7. And the speculation being, as they put in the piece, that type of trade could be made to put the Raiders in range for another trade up later or for a player at another premium position. But it most likely makes sense if it's a move up for a quarterback like Michigan's J.J. McCarthy. So, we can go ahead and launch the talk that we knew was coming at some point of the Titans. Could they weaponize their pick to trade back, get more picks, and go that route when it comes to the NFL draft? And would the Titans be willing to play ball and listen to trade offers from the Raiders or elsewhere? But it sounds like there's at least some interest from the Raiders in moving up in the draft.
Yeah, and so it's very interesting. And those picks, that range is to the Titans, obviously. And then, of course, you now have the Broncos, who move on. What is the Raiders' pick that they would move up?
It is the Raiders are currently scheduled to pick.
They're at 13. Is that
13.
Right? Yeah.
Denver's at 12.
Denver's at 12. So, would the Titans? So I'm trying to think. There's also and then there's also let's see where the heck are the Vikings? Vikings are at 11.
Vikings are 11.
Yeah.
That's three pretty interesting teams right there, right in a row.
It is. And so, like, this is where, like, so I'm looking right now. Brugler has his new mock today, and it's the post-combine mock with just trades galore. And he's got the Titans making one and moving down. And that's the thing. Who covets McCarthy? Who needs McCarthy? Did the Vikings actually lose Cousins? You know, like, do any of these teams have interest in Justin Fields? Because the Bears are dangling him out there.
Yep.
Like, do the Broncos or the Raiders have interest in him? I mean, at least one of these teams could potentially, you know, move up. I feel like the J.J. McCarthy thing, I like him. I think he could be a good quarterback. He's a great athlete. He's got a good arm. He seems like the classic, like, reach for a quarterback because you need a quarterback right now. So that could be something the Titans could take advantage of. But that's the whole question to me is, like, are you taking yourself out of an elite player,
right,
even if you move down four spots to make a trade? I love the idea of, like, adding a third.
For,
like,
sure.
I know Kaharski put out there basically the Broncos, you know, like, I think it's, what, 81 or whatever in the third. That would be the price,
yep,
to move down five spots. I love the idea of doing that, but do you cost yourself the foundational left tackle? Do you cost yourself the multi-Pro Bowl receiver by doing that? If so, and you don't know, that's why this is so fascinating, but that's where you really have to figure out, like, how do you – what's the cutoff for great players in this draft?
Well, and what's the cutoff that you're comfortable going down to? Like, for instance, you know, I would assume, you know, one of those two tackles is probably going. I mean, one of them could go before your pick. If things stay the way that they are, the Jets are taking another one. Like, the Jets, I think. I mean, look, obviously they need offensive tackles. I mean,
yeah, that
it was bad last year.
Trying to save your job, you, right, have to keep him upright.
Right, exactly. Yes. So, like,
and you could make a run this year if you have a good old, decent old line.
Exactly. So, like, I mean, you feel pretty comfortable, pretty confident that the Jets, if they stay at 10, are probably taking a tackle. So, like, if the Chargers take one or the Giants take one and then you trade back to 12, you're probably not getting one of those two guys. So, are you comfortable with that? Are there receivers / tackles that you feel comfortable about that you could grab if you traded down to 13? That you'd be willing to do in order to get the additional compensation and maybe bring in a third-round pick, which you currently don't have, by the way. So there is that part to consider, too, of, like, how much does Rand Carthon and the Titans, how much are they going to be shopping for more picks, knowing that this roster still needs a pretty good amount of turnover and you need more kicks at the can that way. I mean, I go back to what I've said all along. I would rather take my chances at number 7 unless the offer is just unbelievable and have a chance to get some elite players, because this roster is devoid of elite players, rather than just stockpiling more picks. Like, I want quality picks, and I'd love to have both, quality picks and more picks, but if given the choice, I'll take the quality pick, at least for now.
Absolutely. No, it's getting great players. There's nothing that replaces that. The Titans need both. They need a lot of guys, and they need great guys. But, I mean, how many great players are on this roster right now? You know, I'd say DeAndre Hopkins, certainly, but he's later in his career. And Jeffrey Simmons is a great player. And there's some good players, and Harold Landry is definitely a good player. But, you know, one great player in his prime,
yeah,
on this roster. So I'll tell you, you know, this Brugler, and again, this is, you know, it is certainly Brugler. Well, a lot of intelligence from Indy, and you know how people, if there's information, there's misinformation. But in this scenario, all those tackles go after 7, which is very interesting. But that's the thing. It could easily, you know, you got the quarterbacks, you got the receivers, mm-hmm, and then, you know, if McCarthy is a guy who someone wants that Titans spot to come get him. I mean, the Titans are kind of a prime spot. You know, then basically the whole top of your draft is either quarterbacks or receivers.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you go on the run of tackles. But how do the Titans feel about Amarius Mims? How do they feel about J.C. Latham? I mean, there's guys that are right below, you know, those two top obvious guys. And really, I guess Fuaga would be like the obvious third guy, I guess, at least in mock draft world. You know, there's Fawatanu, the guy from Washington, too. I mean, there's a lot of prospects, you know, and this is where, again, like, Callahan to me can be such an asset to the Titans, the elder Callahan.
Would there be a way, I mean, this is what I think would be the perfect scenario, is there a way that you could trade back, get additional assets and still land your guy. Like, that seems like a pretty tall task.
So if they love Amarius Mims, they're like, he's just as good as those guys. You know, he can be – Marius Mims can be just as good as those guys. Let's get that extra pick, move back. Yeah, that's perfect. But there also may be – oh, no, there's quite a huge gap between Fashanu and Mims. I'm going to say Fashanu's name as much as possible on this show because I just feel like he may be the Tennessee Titan.
Okay. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. What do you make of the idea of potentially moving back in the draft? If you're the Tennessee Titans, we'll take your thoughts on that. Plus, a Tennessee Vol who I think really helped himself this past weekend. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits tonight as MTSU basketball takes on Liberty at home. Pregame at 5:30, tip-off at 6 o'clock. Coverage also available on the 93.3 Classic Hits app and at 93.3ClassicHits.com. We'll be joined by Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel coming up at 7:30. We'll get his thoughts on the Vols. Two games left in the regular season for Tennessee as they pursue a number one seed in the NCAA tournament and an SEC regular season championship. So we'll get Mike's thoughts on that coming up here in just a few minutes. Right now, taking your thoughts on the Titans and the NFL draft, 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. The idea of moving back. A lot of different thoughts of this. Got some people on the text line that would be willing to do it if the compensation was right, and if it's people throw out maybe a second-round pick next year involved in the deal. We also have people that have said, yeah, no, thank you. I like seven. Let's stay at seven and have an opportunity to pick a Brock Bowers or a Malik Nabers or a Rome Odunze or Joe Alt, whoever it would be.
Yeah. I mean, Ethan from Lawrenceburg, though, says, I don't think this team has a chance to compete next year, so I need more picks. And my answer back is, yeah, but it's about a great player for many years.
Correct.
It's not just about winning this year. It's about get great players on your team to build around. And Ethan says, agree, but you better be right about that player. Well, that's true. You better be right.
Well,
maybe they're all – that's the name of the game.
That's the name of the game. That's – there's no question for Carthon, it's a huge draft, and it's a huge offseason. Like, you got to make some good decisions, and you don't have to hit on everybody. Like, there are probably going to be some free agents they sign or some draft picks they have that don't work out this offseason. That's fine, but the hit rate needs to be pretty high, and you need to start to turn the roster over. And like you said – bring in elite players. I mean, we named one guy they have who's elite and in his prime, right? Like DeAndre Hopkins, a really good player, had a really nice season for them. But Jeffrey Simmons is probably their one guy right now that's elite and in his prime.
Now, unless
need a lot more than that.
Unless they, come to terms here with Derrick Henry before.
Well,
then I would that would be double the number.
See in his prime.
Did you see Court Bats, Derrick Henry thing video?
No, I didn't.
Oh, dude, definitely watch it. It is well worth it. Well worth it. Please come back, Derrick Henry, and it's like the Titanic theme.
That's good.
That's
good.
I highly recommend.
There was a Tennessee Vol that I think really helped himself this weekend.
Speaking of running backs,
Jalen Wright had himself a really nice combine. And look, it's the combine. But I think some of what he did at the combine matches up with what we saw last year at Tennessee in terms of the explosiveness that he brings to the table. He ran a 4.38 40-yard dash, which I believe was number two at the running back position. He had an 11-foot-2-inches broad jump, which was the best, and a 38-inch vertical was in the top five. Mel Kiper is all over Jalen Wright right now. He was the first guy he put in like his combine wrap-up and said – he had a third-round grade on him, but he is now in the mix to be the top back off the board in April's draft, given the combine that he just had. He had over 1,000 yards, 1,013 yards on 137 carries last season. Look, I thought Jalen Wright was great for Tennessee in his last year. So I think he's going to be a good NFL back. I think he really helped himself this weekend in Indianapolis.
Yeah, good for him. 4.38, man. That's
pretty good.
That's pretty good for what he brings as a physical presence.
Yep.
He is a tackle breaker. So that's great news for him. Now, where is that top back taken? I mean, I don't think it's the first round.
No.
That's the reality of the NFL. You've got to be someone like Jahmyr Gibbs. That turned out to be – a lot of people will rip the Lions, maybe me even. Although, actually, I was more like, why'd you get the box linebacker in the first round? Which, by the way, doesn't look that good right now. But Jahmyr Gibbs, what, 11 last year or whatever?
12.
12, yeah. Whatever. Every once in a while, you have a guy like that, or you'll have a Bijan Robinson.
Yeah.
But in a lot of years, it's going to be second and third round for, like, the top running back.
Yeah.
And but, I mean, Jalen Wright, I'll tell you what, they can't do it. They have way too many other things to worry
exactly.
about. But what if you threw Jalen Wright here with – you know, with Tajay Spears.
I
love that
combination. I thought about that. I think it'd be a good combination, but I'm with you. They can't do it.
Yeah, like, you can't do it.
If they drafted a running back in the second round, they'd be like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on out there?
Remember last year, we were so sure they were getting a receiver.
I know.
Over and over again. Nathan from Lawrenceburg asked, who's a free agent left tackle who would be satisfied with to take a receiver in the first round? My answer is absolutely none.
There's
not one. It's just you're not addressing left tackle in free agency unless you're just you're just plugging a hole here and then you're trying to obviously on this roster you can try Petit Frere there and you can develop Jalen Duncan and great to have Bill Callahan for that, but
yeah.
You've got to draft your left tackle in this draft with one of the top two picks. I believe that.
Maddie says, I'm not sure this can really be answered right now. There are too many variables we don't know yet. There could be a strange run on future backup quarterbacks or a video of Joe Alt toking from a hookah, which I've seen that happen before. Also, who is the trade partner? How many spots are they moving up? And, heck, if Marvin Harrison drops to 6, do we even consider trading up one spot?
He won't, but, I agree with your overall point, Matty. I mean, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, the free agency is going to help this conversation. I do think with the Titans, though, it's like, I think the Titans, to me, it's about cornerback and free agency. And it's about interior offensive line. And, there's other spots you can look at. But I just – like, those two glaring needs are just not going to be addressed with this free agent class, in my opinion.
You don't think Harrison's going to drop to the Titans? Or maybe even to the Giants at 6?
That'd be
– I think he's going to Arizona.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think he's going to Arizona.
Poor guy.
The Brugler mock draft today is pretty wild with the trades, including the Titans. But, it's like – that's the thing. There's just so many variables here with, are the Falcons getting Cousins or not? If they aren't, are they moving up? What are the Broncos, Falcons, Raiders, Vikings, which are all circling around and could be looking to jump into 7, is just a fascinating thing. So we have to see the Cousins thing. By the way, the Florio story, his wife's from Alpharetta.
That it?
I mean, there's no detailing of the indications. It just says, here we go. Quote, we can't get into specifics for now, but we're getting very credible indications that Cousins is seriously considering moving his family to Atlanta, which would mean, obviously, that he'd be signing with the Falcons, end quote. So Aaron Rodgers built a house in Nashville. Did you know?
I did know.
I don't know, man. Look, Florio does have sources in the league. So, I mean, he's not wrong that he is a legitimate – but, this to me is either give the indications or wait, right?
Kirk Cousins, a big Atlanta Thrashers fan back in the day, always wanted to live there.
Yeah, he's got a Dominique Wilkins poster in his house. So, next Falcons QB.
Tune in to 102.5 The Game tomorrow as Vanderbilt men's basketball takes on Kentucky on the road. Pregame at 7:30, tip-off at 8 o'clock. Coverage also available on the 102.5 The Game app and at thegamenashville.com. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. The Vols, huge win against Alabama, as we discussed yesterday over the weekend. Two more games in the regular season before the SEC tournament here in Nashville. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Mike Wilson from the Knoxville News Sentinel. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Doing great. Yeah, it's always nice entering a week after getting a chance to see Joe Rexroad over the weekend.
It really is life-changing, and I'm glad that you got to experience that in Tuscaloosa on Saturday.
I've told the listeners, you call me Bougie Joe. It's fine. You can just go ahead and tell me what you and Grant Ramey call me.
Grant technically came up with that one, but yes, we have latched it aggressively.
He was very upset yesterday, Mike, that apparently the event level at Alabama has one bathroom. or two functional bathrooms.
He should be upset about that. That was crazy.
Yeah, it was quite a post-game scene with Ryan Schumper and I running around the entire arena.
Where's the bathroom?
And then we were late for Josiah talking, by the way, because of that.
Very disappointing effort there.
Very, very disappointing indeed. What was not disappointing was Tennessee's effort on Saturday to come away with the win in Tuscaloosa, and they did it, Mike, in a game where it was not the Dalton Connect show like it was in the Auburn game. What did you make of what Tennessee was able to pull off with their win against Alabama on the road Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think outside of the last 4 minutes of the first half, first 6 minutes of the second half, it felt like Tennessee did good things throughout the rest of that game and was largely in control of those things. I thought it mirrored the Kentucky game in some ways, different pace, different scoring level, but it had that same parallel of it wasn't Dalton Connect's best game, but Tennessee reminded everyone that it still has enough at other positions and enough other veterans, and it can win games in other ways without Dalton Connect being the one that does it. So I think that's just good, again, for Tennessee to know and remember that it's not just Dalton Connect. Like, they've got a lot of guys in this team that can win games and have won games.
Yeah, well, you sat next to me Saturday, so you got my basketball insights all night, which is a big benefit for you. But
I'm much wiser now.
Yeah, as we discussed, and not just Connect, but I mean Jonas Adu, you get the foul trouble, and I didn't think he played very well. He made some plays. Ziegler doesn't shoot well. There are a lot of things that you think of as needs for this team to be successful that didn't happen, and yet they still beat that team, which is very hard to beat on that floor. So your takeaway, do you have any, different feeling about what this team could be, what that means, and so on as we move deeper into this month?
Yeah, my feeling in this team for a long time has been, and I think I said this to you during the game, Joe, is you need Dalton Connect, Jonas Adu, and Zakai Ziegler to pretty much be your best three to be the best team that you're going to be. I don't know that they were that. I mean, Zakai hit two of his final three-pointers that were massive shots. I think he was 3-for-11 up to that, or 2-for-11 maybe up to that point. Kept shooting, made a couple big ones at the end. That was great. Jonas Adu had some good plays in the second half. Dalton Connect obviously hit that big mid-range jumper late, but it was more of Josiah Jordan James having a double-double, Jermaine Mashak hitting two corner threes, and a play that not a lot of people talked about, I felt like, was the driving in floater he hit as well. He made plays that steal at midcourt. Santiago Vescovi felt like he had six steals. I think he finished with three or four. So many guys made little plays, and that to me was a good reminder that this team's going to find ways because they've got more pieces than just the guys who have done the most for them throughout the year.
And Mike, to that point, the overall season, I mean, last year heading into the tournament, obviously, Ziegler was hurt, and you didn't have him available. Just the difference that having him on the floor and the way that he's playing, the level he's playing at, you think could make for this team down the stretch?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, your best two players are players you didn't have at this time last year in Zakai Ziegler and Dalton Connect. So Tennessee kind of has a new life in its offense and in its defense, too, with the other guys that are playing such high-level defense. So it does feel like a team that's got the kind of melting pot of pieces you'd want, because obviously last year they didn't have anything like Dalton Connect, and you've got Zakai Ziegler back healthy now, and the only other tournament he played in was as a freshman. He's a centerpiece now. So, yeah, I mean, your two best guys are guys you didn't have this time last year, so you've got to feel pretty good with that.
How important do you think the one seed is for Tennessee? Right now it seems like the bracketometrists are about split on Tennessee or Arizona. Big opportunity this week, though, I think, for Tennessee to put themselves in the driver's seat. How important do you think that is?
Statistically, the odds say it's very important. That the odds of going to the Final Four are much better as a one. I don't know. I look at it and say, if you're a two and you stay on this side of the country, does that favor you? Opposed to having that trip all the way to L.A. and probably much lesser opportunity for fan support, and still probably seeing Arizona as the two out there, you'd imagine. But, yeah, I mean, a one seed does matter. I think you want it because the odds say your chances of going to the Final Four are better. In the case of Tennessee, assuming they get to the Elite Eight round, it means you avoid a Purdue, UConn, or Houston, assuming those teams also get there. So right away, I mean, your odds are greater. So you want to get it, and they've got the opportunity. They have two quad one games this week by playing at South Carolina and against Kentucky. Arizona doesn't have any. They have two quad twos left. So win out this week and don't blow it in the SEC tournament, and maybe you are that fourth one seed.
Mike, where do you think the season that Dalton Connect is having ranks? When you start to sift through Tennessee basketball history, you know, we were talking about Allen Houston the other day and the great players that they've had, but is this the greatest year that we have ever seen out of a Tennessee basketball player?
It's the greatest one I've seen in whatever years I've been here. So I texted a better source, Mike Strange, on that last week and kind of asked the same thing, like, hey, where does this stack up? And you know, I mean, he invoked any name you can think of when it comes to the conversation this is in, and potentially it could end up as, you know, a second or third best season that he could think of in his time, having seen Tennessee and followed Tennessee. So he stacks up with just about anyone. I mean, it's averaging, what, 25 a game in SEC play? It's just not something you see super often anymore, not something that you've seen at Tennessee. I think Grant Williams' best year was 18-8. So this is kind of a different level with what Dalton's doing right now.
Well, the thing with him, too, is he had the ankle in the North Carolina game, and then it was about 2 weeks where he was getting like some 7- and 9-point games, right? It was pretty clear. And they were still playing well, by the way. I mean, you take that out, and the numbers would be eye-popping. Do you think he's got a shot here? I mean, like Zach Edey is – the reigning player of the year, the favorite to win it again. He gets great numbers. I do think sometimes voters get fatigued a little bit with the idea of a repeat winner, but I also feel like Connect could have used a 30-pointer in that game the other night that's on game day. What kind of chance do you think he has?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's an All-American and should be first team. I don't know. There's also the human nature side of this, I think, where, yeah, Zach Edey, you're saying fatigue. I think on the other side of it, there's, well, Zach Edey won it last year. He came back to school. He's done nothing to lose it. So probably just going to get a lot of votes just on that. I mean, he's averaging, what, 24-12? So I think right off that, you're going to see a lot of votes. So I don't know that Dalton's got that. I could see him being heavily in the conversation for it. He's got a couple big opportunities this week to improve that resume as well. But certainly, I mean, he's put himself on the first team All-American line.
And SEC, I mean, there's no way he's not SEC Player of the Year, right?
You would think not. I mean, what he's done, again, the SEC numbers in SEC-only games, say he's at like 25 a game. Sears is at, I think, 21-8, 22. And Mark Sears it has had a tremendous season for Alabama. And it's a tough blow that someone comes in and suddenly averages 25 on you. And probably clears you in that race. But, yeah, I mean, he's shooting better from the field, shooting better from three. His assist-to-turnover ratio is better. Obviously has more rebounds just by nature of being 6'6", opposed to 6'2"-ish. So, yeah, I think it's obvious. I think, realistically, it won't be unanimous, but I think it probably should be, because I think with what Dalton's done in the past few weeks, it's clear that he's the guy.
So, Mike, they've had two huge wins, one against Auburn where Connect goes nuts, and then the big win against Alabama in this – four-game stretch. It's been, and you know, we've been talking about this four-game stretch to close out the season for weeks now. South Carolina and Kentucky left on the schedule. What do you make of those two matchups for Tennessee as they close out the regular season and try to cap off the SEC championship?
Yeah, I mean, starting with South Carolina, I think there's two results that confused me this year for Tennessee. One is losing to South Carolina by 4 at home, and the other is probably beating Florida by 20, because Florida, I thought, was going to be pretty good, and now they've proven they are good. So those results stand out, and obviously Tennessee is now going to South Carolina, which is still in the SEC race, by the way. They win that, they're very much still in the title chase here. So Tennessee needs a win there. I think they get one. I thought the last South Carolina meeting was just a very strange game where Tennessee missed a lot at the rim, which is what South Carolina's defense forced a lot of opponents to do. But Tennessee just shot point free throw line. Got 8 points total from Zakai Ziegler, Jonas Adu. So just kind of everything kind of went wrong at once. So I think they get a win there. Kentucky is maybe the biggest wild card in the nation. Definitely, I think, in the SEC, because they might come in and drop 95 on you, or they might let you score 175.
Or both.
It's hard to know. Or both. Yeah, I mean, they could play a game that does that too, because what, the Alabama game was 117-95. So, yeah, I think Tennessee senior day at home, potentially still playing for an SEC title that day. Vols have obviously a great shot there too.
Mike, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning. And have fun. You're going to be seeing a lot of Rex Road coming up.
See you Saturday, buddy. Yeah.
Can't wait. Yeah, thanks. Pleasure talking to you, Robbie, and see you, Boosh.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. Mike Wilson, one of our favorites here on the program from the Knoxville News Sentinel. And a big one coming up tomorrow for Tennessee as they take on South Carolina on the road. And then what I'm sure will be a pretty wild environment on Saturday at home against Kentucky, which Joe Rex Road will be there for. 615.
And Michelle Knezovic will be too.
She will be too. And then
old Michelle.
And then next week, we got a tournament around here, too.
We do.
A lot of things going on. Speaking of things going on, the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad's going on. That's coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Glorious. And I love it here. I love it here. Till I'm victorious.
A record is a record. I don't want that to be the reason people remember me. I hope people remember me for the way I played with a smile on my face, my competitive fire. Sure, they can remember the wins, but also just like the fun me and my teammates had together.
It's that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. An interesting combination of Rex Road and Caitlin Clark there. That was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's always good to hear my voice. Thank you, Nick. One of many really stirring moments on the program. But I am going to talk about Caitlin Clark today. And I just, like, can we just not have any joy in life? Like, we have to ruin everything that's great.
I've seen some of this.
By having stupid arguments.
Yeah.
Seen some of what?
Well, Maravich did it in 3 years and blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, my God, okay.
Well, like, so Mark Potash, who I like a lot, hockey guy, Chicago Sun-Times guy. Like, I'm picking on him just because I randomly saw this. This is why I did this. I saw this tweet. I'm like, what? So here's this tweet. Can't we just appreciate Caitlin Clark's record for what it is? Who cares if Pete Maravich only played 3 seasons or that he played with no 3-point shot and without a shot clock and with a larger ball or that he played 54 years ago? Clark's record stands on its own merit. Yes, I'm picking up your sarcasm there, Mark. Again, can we just enjoy Caitlin Clark? I mean, it's like she's just been picked apart left and right. It's like, I mean, Kim Mulkey is sitting here, you know, talking about her taking like 40 shots a game or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know I love picking on Kim Mulkey.
Yeah.
Well, and also Kim Mulkey then kind of diminished a little bit, you know, her record compared to Pete Maravich. Well, here are the actual stats. First of all, Pete Maravich, incredible. 44.2 points per game, 3 seasons, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like there will never be anything like it. But just for the record, he shot 38.1 times per game. 38.1 shots per game. And by the way, Caitlin Clark, 19.9. But I don't care. I'm not comparing. I'm not saying her record's better than his or whatever. Or her, you know, I mean, it's just been a lot of fun to me to see her pass. You know, obviously she passed Kelsey Plum.
Yep.
And then it was actually great to see Lynette Woodard, who was back before the NCAA, would sanction women's basketball. It was the AIAW, you know, 3,649 points. She passed her. She actually, by the way, I mean, this whole thing is bringing people to light who no one's heard of, and I'll raise my hand. Pearl Moore, Francis Marion University, 4,061 points. Caitlin Clark's probably not going to catch her. If she goes on an absolute absurd heater and they go all the way to the Natty, maybe. But to me, is she the GOAT? Jay Williams, you have to win it all to be the GOAT. I don't know if she's the GOAT. I just know that I love watching her play and that she has been amazing for women's basketball, and I'm going to enjoy every minute I can continue to watch her play. And I'm excited for Indianapolis because, like, they're absolutely thrilled that they're going to get her with the number one overall pick.
Yep.
And she's going to play in Indy. Like, it's just we have to argue and pick apart everything. And I think Caitlin Clark is just a great player, you know. And I get in the arguments too, like the LeBron Jordan GOAT stuff. But I think when you're comparing eras and you're comparing men's and women's basketball and all these, no three-point, I mean, like, there's no argument to be had anyway, you know? Why does she have to be knocked down at all? She's just great. Enjoy her. That's all I'm asking.
I agree. It's fun to watch. And, you know, she's averaging 32.3 points per game this year. And basically, like, she's kind of Steph Curry-like. That's the way to describe
it. That's exactly, to me, it's the same sort of thing. Like, she can hit a shot from the logo, and she's an incredible passer and everything. Yeah.
It's a lot. And what's really cool is, like, the sensation that it has become. Like, everywhere they go, the place is sold out, and there's, like, a waiting list to get in, and people are camping outside. It's, like, it's really cool. And I'm with you. Like, I wish people would enjoy things a little bit more and just watch greatness unfold. I don't know. I've never seen anyone like her. I know that. In the women's game, I've not seen anyone like her and specifically what she does. Does that automatically mean that she's the greatest? No. I mean, I don't know. Maybe she ends up being that one day. I'm interested to see this tournament because, you know, can she take them on a run where they've got a chance to get to a Final Four and to compete for a national championship? But I'm with you. Like, it's fun. I've seen a lot this week on Twitter of, like, the Maravich stuff is basically what I've seen. And look, you know, I was not alive to watch Pete Maravich play college basketball. So
I couldn't tell you. I wasn't even.
Yeah, so I couldn't tell you. But all I do know is I've never seen anything like her before in the women's game at the college level, and it's fun to watch.
She's one of the most fun basketball players, period, that I've ever watched. So, I mean, just enjoy. And again, it's the shooting, but also, I mean, there's a little bit, to me, the LeBron comparison is like when LeBron started to become a sensation, and yes, I'm a basketball snob, but when I first started watching him, one of the things I look at is like, do you get the game?
Yeah.
And he always made the right pass right now, like just always made the right basketball play from high school.
Well, she's averaged almost 9 assists.
Yeah, she's an incredible passer. She completely controls the game, and that's beyond just the scoring. By the way, someone points out John Pierce, by the way, Lipscomb, 4,230 points. So that's the all-time any level men's or women's, and he beat Phil Hutchinson, his roommate, and Lipscomb AD. So worth mentioning there. I mean, look, it's all fun. These are ridiculous numbers. It's impossible to apples to apples any of this stuff, but I just don't understand why people want to, you know, and even, you know, now I'm losing her name, but she talked about how the COVID year and everything on a podcast, and it's like, she didn't even take her COVID year, you know. I get it. People want to are automatically, someone's on a pedestal, someone's chasing greatness, or, you know, people want to pick them apart to some extent. But I just feel like there's a little bit of missing, like, just the enjoyment of watching her, which, by the way, at this game to get the record. So Travis Scott's there, and then he sees Jake from State Farm.
Yeah.
But Maya Moore is also there, which was like a total, like, Caitlin Clark freaked out about that. And you know who else was there? Nolan Ryan. Nolan Ryan was there. Sure. Nolan Ryan was in the house. Why not?
I saw the Travis Scott video came across my Twitter feed the other day, and the quote tweet over the top of it was, "You'll never guess who Travis Scott daps up in this video." And I'm just sitting there watching it, and then there's Jake from State Farm. I was like, you're right. I would not have guessed that.
Jason Glidsville says, "So Joe, who works on a talk show, is mad about talk show fodder?" Well,
sometimes we're a victim of our own circumstances.
Well, this is a talk show, and so I'm arguing that the arguing about this is stupid, okay? That's my argument.
Go Caitlin. I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, the problem is, and that's another thing too, is, you know, Iowa's actually, you talk about like MVP. I mean, Iowa's like I don't even think they're an NCAA team.
It's like they're not that good.
It's a pretty, yeah. Lisa Bluter needed to get in the portal and get a great post or something to help her this year, because I don't think they're going to get to the Final Four. I hope they do. If they do, she's going to carry them. But, like, I mean, people rearranging their schedules to watch her.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. Like, she is must watch TV, and I think she's going to do really good things for the WNBA too.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Willie Donick. Preds going for win number 9 in a row tonight. Tommy Novak fresh off a new deal. We'll get his thoughts on all that and more. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.